ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila E.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Kaur Acharya Vaskar, Chapter 9, Text Number 4. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina matsthani sarvabhutani nachahang teshvavastikaha. Translation. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, I am not in them. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not perceivable through the gross material senses. It is said, Atah Shri Krishna Ramadi Nabhaved Rahim Indriyai Sevan Mukhehi Jivado Swayameva Spuratyada from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Lord Shri Krishna's name, fame, pastimes, etc. cannot be understood by material senses. Only to one who is engaged in pure devotional service under proper guidance is he revealed. In the Brahma Samhita it is stated, Primanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochana Santa Sadaiva Hridayeshu Vilopayati. One can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, always within himself and outside himself, if one has developed a transcendental loving attitude towards him. Thus, for people in general, he is not visible. Here it is said that although he is all-pervading, everywhere present, he is not conceivable by the material senses. This is indicated here by the word avyakta murtina. But actually, although we cannot see him, everything is resting in him. As we have discussed in the 7th chapter, the entire material cosmic manifestation is only a combination of his two different energies, the superior spiritual energy and the inferior material energy. Just as the sunshine is spread all over the universe, the energy of the Lord is spread all over the creation, and everything is resting in that energy. Yet, one should not conclude that because he is spread all over, he has lost his personal existence. To refute such an argument, the Lord says, I am everywhere, and everything is in me, but still I am aloof. For example, a king heads a government which is but the manifestation of the king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king, and each department is resting on the king's power. But still, one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. That is a crude example. Similarly, all the manifestations that we see and everything that exists, both in this material world and in the spiritual world, are resting on the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Creation takes place by the diffusion of his different energies, and as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam, he is everywhere present by his personal representation, the diffusion of his different energies. So this is a verse which is, often people ask us about this verse. What does it mean? Doesn't seem to make any sense. Krishna's everywhere and in everything, and everything's in him, but still he's not in everything. He says one thing and says something else completely the opposite. So how is it possible? What do you think? What kind of book is this? Book of knowledge, and he says one thing and in the next sentence says something completely the opposite. Doesn't sound like a very good philosophy. Anyone have any ideas? No ideas?
Because Krishna is transcendental.
Krishna is transcendental. Yeah. He's not only transcendental, but he's all-powerful. And he is the reservoir of inconceivable opposites. He is greater than the greatest and smaller than the smallest. As Mahavishnu, all the universes are coming from his body in seed form. And as Paramatma, he enters into the Paramanu. Paramanu means the smallest thing, and he goes in there too. So he's bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest. He's the kindest of all. But to the atheists and demons, he is, comes as cruel death. The atheists who don't believe in God, they also have their darshan of God in the form of death. But that is not very pleasing. It is a unpleasing. In so many ways, Krishna, he's the most powerful, but still he agrees to be tied up by Mother Yashoda. The yogis, by their yogic practice, they cannot approach him. Even after many, many years, Pantastu Koti Shadavatsara Sampragam Yoga Yora Tabi Manaso Muni Pungavan Sopyastya Prabhadasinya Vinchinti Tatve Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhujam. The yogi is performing many severe austerities. After over many, many thousands of years, they can hardly approach the tip of the toe of Govinda. And here's Mother Yashoda, who is just, from the external point of view, just a housewife. And Krishna happens to be her son, and she's tying him up. He's controlling everyone, but she's controlling Krishna. So, does it make any sense? When Mother Yashoda was looking in Krishna's mouth to chastise him, why are you eating dirt? She opened his mouth, and inside she saw all the universes. And in that vision, she saw all the universes inside Krishna's mouth, and inside she saw herself also looking in Krishna's mouth. So Krishna's within the universe, and all the universes are in him. How is it possible? It's possible because he's God. That is because he has achintya shakti. The first thing, if we want to understand God, is we have to accept his achintya shakti. If we think that God is limited, then there's no meaning to his being God. Limited means he's under the control of some laws, right? If God can't do everything, that means that there's something limiting him. So something limiting him means he's under the control of some other laws. So who set up such a law to limit him? That means he's not God. God means that everything is under his control. And therefore he can do whatever he likes. Just like sometimes people may wonder, why is Krishna playing a flute? If he wants to play an instrument, why doesn't he play an electric guitar or a piano or saxophone or something else? So the answer, what is the answer? Does anyone know? The answer is because he likes to play a flute. He's God, he can do whatever he can do whatever he likes. Whatever he wants he can do, right? It's not that anyone has to say you're God, so you shouldn't play a flute. You're too exalted. You should just sit like this. Be very stern. No, he's God. He can do whatever he likes. He likes to eat milk and butter and dahi and play with the monkeys in Vrindavan. Why? Well, he's God. Whatever he likes, he can do. He likes to enjoy life. Everyone likes to enjoy. So in his top, the topmost feature of God is simply enjoying. The topmost feature of God, simply enjoying. Just like there was one German scholar, one time he came to India and he wanted to find out actually who is God. So he went to so many temples and he saw the different demigods and they're all doing something. Just like Durga is supervising material energy and Shiva is supervising Durga and Brahma is creating the universe and Indra is supervising the heavenly planets. When he came to Krishna, he saw Krishna playing on a flute and dancing with Radharani. He said, this must be God. Because he's no work to do. He's just enjoying life. So God means he doesn't have any obligation. Krishna says in the Gita, I'm not under any obligation to do any work. And there's no karma phal affects me. I'm not under the rules of any karma. So this is God, simply enjoying. And if he wants to be in all living beings and at the same time not in them, it's also possible. Actually, we can understand that the Prabhupada explains in the purport. He's in all living beings as the Paramatma, still he's aloof. He's not in all, still all living beings are not in him, means he's aloof. Upadrashtanumantacha. He sees everything, he gives the sanction, but he's not involved. Sometimes people ask why, if God is all good, does he allow so much suffering? That means he gives his independence. He's not involved. Do you want to be like this? Okay. He's not involved. He'll give you good advice if you don't follow it. All right, it's up to you. He's aloof. He doesn't... The Supreme Lord is in the heart of every living being. That doesn't mean when the living being takes the body of a pig that the Supreme Lord also suffers on the level of a pig. He's with the jiva, but he's not involved in the enjoyments and suffering. He's aloof. So, this is God. He can do whatever he wants. This is called faith. Faith means to accept that God is doing whatever he likes. If he's God, it means he should be something inconceivably wonderful. Otherwise, he's not God. Just like all these rascals, they worship Sai Baba as God. What's he doing that he's inconceivably wonderful? Just making little ashes. To be God, you've got to do something better than that. It's pretty, in England the royal family is degraded and, you know, everything's going down in the modern age, but still you'd expect God to be more than, you don't think just because everything else is going down that God, he's also lost all his power and all he can do is make a little ashes. run out of power. Sorry, all I can give you is some ashes. Well, it would have been nice if you could have given me $1,000 a day or something. All I get is a little ashes. Okay, what to do? Better than nothing, they may be thinking. So, people, they don't know what is God, how great is God. They take some, everyone has their own favorite incarnation of God. There's 300 at the moment. The latest census of bogus incarnations of God. There's about 300 in India at the present time. Sai Baba seems to be at the top of the competition. He lost a lot of ratings when he ran away. He ran away and locked himself inside when they were trying to kill him and called the police. Didn't seem like God, but anyway, somehow or other, people are stupid enough to accept him. So anyway, we should understand, God is not such a small timer that he has to ring an alarm bell when the police come, when someone comes to attack him. We read in the Srimad Bhagavatam how Krishna, he was attacked by thousands of people when he was at Mathura. The armies of Jarasandha and Kalyavana came at the same time. So Krishna told Balaram, you just stay inside the city and make sure everything's okay. You keep all the forces. And Krishna himself went outside and destroyed them all without getting even injured himself. As Prabhupada notes, this is unique in the history of military science. They say the great generals, the great military heroes, in this recent war, that General Schwarzkopf was the great hero, right? Because he didn't fight himself. All he did was sit in some bunker and give orders. He didn't actually fight himself. Or they have in the Second World War that General Patton and Mountbatten. This is Western, I don't know, in India they have Shivaji, great military heroes. The Punjabi, Guru Gobind Singh was also fighting, right? But Krishna, he's inconceivably greater than any other. And when Krishna fights, he's a better fighter than anyone. We have so many military heroes. If you're interested in military heroes, Krishna's the greatest. If you're interested in lovers, nowadays this romance is very popular. They have all these romance novels people read. In Hindi movie also, there's romance. But if you want romance, then Krishna's the best. He's the best lover. As Prabhupada said, sometimes people criticize Krishna because he has 16,000 wives. They say he must be very lusty. So Prabhupada said, even if you think he's lusty, still you have to admit he's the supreme lusty. You cannot be him. You cannot match him. You have to admit you are defeated. You are envious. But you cannot keep up with Krishna. Prabhupada explained, why 16? You're thinking it's many wives. Why 16,000 is many? For him it's nothing. That in the spiritual world, what is the situation? Lakshmi Sahasra Shata Sambrahma Siddhimad. He's worshipped by hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis. Why 16,000? For him it's just a few. Just, it's not many. Of course, in Indian history we saw many kings and big Hindus and Muslims, they used to have many, many wives. I think Prabhupada is telling in Lucknow, there was one king, he built a big palace, he had some 2,000 wives or something. He built a big palace, they all had king of Avad. In Avad.
Yeah.
In Lucknow his capital was. Yeah. How many wives did he have?
What, thousand or 200?
A few hundreds. It's nothing compared to Krishna. But still, Prabhupada was explaining that all the wives, they were feeling some frustration. Because having hundreds of wives, he's only one person. So they're feeling something. What's the use of being the wife of the king when there's several hundred co-wives? You never get to see your husband. He probably doesn't even know your name. How can you remember the name of so many wives? Let alone see them. But with Krishna, that wasn't the case, because he expanded himself into as many forms as there were queens. And each one of them thought, Krishna is with me only. He likes me the best. He doesn't go with it, because he's with me all the time, means he's not with the others. They didn't know that Krishna was with all the others at the same time. So in this way, Krishna is the best lover, because he satisfies all. In the Rasa dance also, Krishna expanded himself into so many forms, and he was dancing with each gopi, but each gopi couldn't see all the other forms. He thought, Krishna's only dancing with me. So in this way, Krishna is inconceivable, and he uses his inconceivable powers. His main interest is how to satisfy his devotees. The devotees, they're simply thinking how to satisfy Krishna, and Krishna is simply thinking how to satisfy his devotees. That's why otherwise he doesn't manifest his inconceivable power. But he only uses it, his main interest is how to use his inconceivable power, how to satisfy his devotees. Bhakta Vatsala Bhagavan. That's why Eko Bahusyam, why God, we're all parts and parcels of God. Why do we exist? Sometimes people ask, why do we exist? Well, we exist for the pleasure of God. Because he expanded himself so that he could enjoy. Because enjoyment, there's no enjoyment on your own. You could try it out sometime. You get a big feast of all nice foods and eat it by yourself. There's no pleasure. But even if you have a simple meal and you take it with friends and share it, or if you get George to cook up some knockout sweet that absolutely devastates you. But there's no fun for George if he just eats it by himself. He wants to devastate others also. So he distributes to others. So it's more fun. So Krishna also, he eats all the nicest foods. In India, we see Indians are giving up their culture in so many ways, but still, they like Indian food because it's pretty good. It's better than in the Western countries. All they know is how to boil some vegetables, and that's about it, and other things too. They don't know all the spices and all this complicated, different nice things how to cook. So all this nice culture was developed, how to cook nice foods for Krishna. Just like, what are the famous places for eating in India? Nakdwa is one, Puri is another, and then different temples. In South India they don't have so many varieties. But still, they have the temple specialities. If you go early morning, Tirupati Balaji, you go early morning, you get the big plate of rice. Otherwise, their laddu, pretty good. pretty nice, eh? Tirupati ladus, all full of kaju and karpur and all cooked in ghee. And very nice. So all these things, they were made for the service of Krishna. And Krishna, he doesn't have any indigestion problems. He can eat. He can eat, just like we see, what's Krishna eating? That shukta, shak, adi, means shukta and shak to start with. That's just the beginning. And bhaji, all fried things. Nalita kushmanda means some kind of pumpkin preparation. Dal cooked with vegetables. See, when you learn a language, the first thing you learn all the different kinds of food. Then preparations made from milk, dodhi, yogurt, fill all the banana flowers, one by one. It takes a long time. It's very nice. Krishna likes it very much. Then so many preparations are there. This is Krishna's breakfast. Then he takes his lunchbox for lunch, but in the morning he has a good meal. Because so many preparations, 12 kinds of sour preparations, all different kinds of vegetables, sweets. This is his breakfast. Radharani's cooking. You know that? Do you know why Radharani's cooking for Krishna? Ah, yeah, Shika. It's Mother Yashoda calls, because Durvasa Muni benedicted Srimati Radhika. Because Durvasa Muni, he goes from place to place and he harasses people. And if they become upset, then he curses them. And if he tolerates them, he gives them a blessing. So, just like Kunti Devi, she served him very nicely. So, Srimati Radhika, she also served him very nicely. So she, Durvasa Muni gave the benediction. Whatever you cook will be better than nectar. And whoever eats it will never get sick. So Mother Yashoda knows, I want my son never to get sick, so you cook for him. So she's cooking so many things. And Krishna is enjoying. And he doesn't have any indigestion problem. That one time in Vrindavan, there was a dispute going on between the cook in the temple who was cooking for Krishna Balaram in our ISKCON temple. And the temple president. Because usually the pujaris and cooks who are serving the deity, usually they like to loot the treasury. They want to, whatever money comes in, they want to spend so much money, all for the deities. But of course the temple president and treasurer, he has to see, well, we also have to do so many things. We have to feed the devotees, give them clothes, and keep the building in good shape and pay the telephone bill. So they make a budget. So anyway, there's some dispute going on. So the head cook went to Prabhupada and said, look, they're not giving me enough money. I can only make little offering for Krishna. I want to feed him. Big offering. So how much should we feed Krishna? Prabhupada said you should feed Krishna like a healthy young man. He has a good appetite. Also we see in Puri, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, he made a huge feast. So many different preparations. And big pile of rice. And he put so much ghee on the rice that the ghee was coming out like rivers. And there was big pots. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, look, I'm just, how can I eat so much? This is ridiculous. Sarvabhaum said, look, don't try to trick me. I know who you are. At Jagannath Puri, you eat chapan bhog every day you're eating. Then in Vrindavan, Mother Yashoda is feeding you every day so many things. And then also in Vrindavan every day, all the other families are calling you and you're also eating. Plus on top of that, you're so greedy you're stealing the butter. So don't tell me you can't eat. I know you can eat. Eat, he told him. So what could Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say? We see that also, we all personally saw that in London in 1976 at the Bhaktivedanta Manor. What had happened was, our movement had gone through a very difficult period financially at that time. So, the deities, they were being given very small offerings of bhog. And even the flowers, they were making one flower, one leaf, like this, because the gardens weren't developed and flowers are very expensive. So Prabhupada said, okay, you give not such a nice garland. Then a new GBC came and he said, I think we should worship Krishna better. We'll take a loan from the bank and we'll spend for Krishna. So they started, instead of these, actually it was so austere when I joined the temple there that it was cold in the winter and everyone was walking around in coats inside, heavy coats, and there was no heating. And just there was every day this khichdi and cabbage. Every day. Cabbage and aloo sabji and khichdi. And that was a, and they had Mahaprasad, little small offering. And there were so many devotees, about 100 devotees. So everyone would line up to get this much Mahaprasad. And that was the only palatable prasad. So then the OGBC can say, I think we should feed Krishna first thing. So anyway, somehow they got some money and they started offering 108 big pieces of sandesh and rasgulla every morning for Mangalarti. Big offerings, and all the devotees were in bliss because Krishna was getting fed nicely. And every devotee also got full Mangalarti sweet, which they couldn't dream of, but they used to dream about only. And they could get some sandesh and all these things. So what happened was actually, after 2 weeks, the pujari came and said, there's an emergency. That we need all new clothes for Krishna because he's got too fat and all the clothes don't fit him anymore. And everyone could see that actually the deity, Krishna, that he was, before he was looking like me, but he's beginning to look like George. So that happened. And you see also in central London, we have the temple Radha London Ishra. And Krishna there, he always looks like George, because they feed him so much. It's famous. Devotees used to come from America on the way to India, and they used to stop deliberately in London just to get some of Radha London Ishra's Mahaprasad. So nice. So he's always, you have the picture in your house, Radha London Ishra. He always looks pretty well fed. Radha and Krishna. So, you know, I think, what kind of a god is this? He's eating and dancing. And, well, that's God. He means the supreme enjoyer. People, they don't have any idea. They think God is some nasty guy who just punishes you. In the Christian religion, they have, because they have no idea of God. So they have a picture in the Sistine Chapel painted by Michelangelo. What is their idea of God? They have a picture of God sitting on, he's sitting on a cloud, because he's up there somewhere. He's probably, must be sitting on a cloud, right? And he looks very old with a long white beard, because he's the oldest person, right? He created the universe. By now he must have got very old. He has a big long beard. And he's simply looking down with an angry look on his face and sending some thunderbolts to punish all the people. That's their idea of God. No wonder the Christian religion is failing. Who wants a God like that? God loves you. How are you going to love a God who's like, who looks like a decrepit old man who can hardly walk? That's not God. Actually, there was one famous atheist called Nietzsche. So, he made so much atheistic, these are the so-called philosophers of the Western world. So he made so much atheistic propaganda. There's no God. God is dead. One time he said sarcastically, I could believe in a God who could dance. He didn't know about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna. He was always dancing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's one name is Gaur Nataraj. Generally we think Nataraj means Lord Shiva. So he's a good dancer, no doubt. But the best dancer is Lord Chaitanya. He's even better in his dancing. Lord Shiva's dancing destroys the world. And Lord Chaitanya's dancing saves the world. So here's because why he became atheistic, because the whole concept of God they have is so uninspiring. They say God is all merciful, but if you don't believe in him, you go to hell forever. So when I thought about that, when I was a little kid, about 11 years old, I became an atheist. I thought, what's the use of such a God? He's supposed to be merciful, but if you don't believe in him, one lifetime, then you have to go to hell forever. What kind of mercy is that? Sounds worse than the teachers at school. You do one little thing wrong and they yell at you. This guy, God, you know, too much. I'd rather go to hell. Why should I go to heaven? If you're up there with him directly, he must be worse. He's got such a bad temper or something. I better go to hell. It's probably safer there. So actually it makes no sense. So people, they become atheists because they have no idea how wonderful is God. Is Nietzsche, his theory was that God is dead. He said there might have been a God, but even if there was a God, he created the universe a long time ago, so probably by now he died. So this became a very popular philosophy. God is dead. And even many so-called Christians, theologians, they made such a theory. It's really amazing what bogus things they come up with. Anyway, one time, you know, they in the Western countries especially, they write this graffiti. Now they started inside the toilets in the trains in India, they write things. In the Western countries, any wall, they write political slogans or anything. Anything that comes in their mind. So someone had written, God is dead, on a wall, signed Nietzsche. So of course Nietzsche, he lived about 100 years ago, he already did himself. So someone else wrote on the wall, Nietzsche is dead, signed God. He's thinking God is dead, but God is still there, and he's dead by God's order. So actually, they don't have any idea. They have no philosophy. They have no idea who is God. Actually, recently I was in Italy, and the devotees were telling me they did this Padyatra. And in Italy, it actually has a very strong religious culture and tradition, Catholic culture. So they have so many monasteries and beautiful churches, wonderful art, architecture. But the Catholic Church, as in other parts of the world, is in a crisis. Means, just like the Pope's always saying against abortion and divorce and all these things, people don't care. We want to be Catholics, but we don't want to follow all these rules. We like the Pope, we respect you, but we're not going to listen to anything you say, because we want sense gratification. So the Pope's going on saying no abortion and all these things. But no one cares for him anymore. So mostly all the Catholic, there's a lot of Catholic churches and priests in Italy still, but they're kind of dispirited and discouraged. Because all the principles, they say no abortion, no contraception, and no divorce, but at the same time they eat meat and drink wine, but they've got some idea of some principles. They have some idea of God. So they're feeling dispirited. So wherever our Padyatra went in Italy, the priests in the villages, they would invite them, please come and stay with us. And sometimes they called them into the churches, and they called all the people in the village, and they would bring the deities of Gornatai into the church. Yeah. And the priests, in some places, the priests, they would lecture to the, they would tell the people, now we're going to have the Hare Krishna people give a lecture, you should understand that Krishna is God. So you should listen. They were saying like that. They were saying like that. And they were actually, they were seeing that. They were seeing that here is real spiritual life. This is real devotion. They were appreciating that. Actually, in Italy, the devotees, they sell full sets of books, full set of Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, all translated in Italian. They go in any village, immediately they first of all go to the parish priest. And they all immediately purchase. So in Italy, every parish priest, they all have our books. And they're reading them and they're appreciating. And many, even in Belfast, one Presbyterian minister, Presbyterians are really hard line. They're usually the ones who are like born again. There's one Presbyterian minister who regularly in his Sunday lectures, he reads from Srimad Bhagavatam to his parishioners. Because they don't have, the point is they don't have any idea of God. I remember I was brought up as a Catholic. We used to go to church and they give these Sunday sermons, which was really boring. Everyone just... But they never spoke about God. Because they you'd never hear them once speak about God. They usually speak about some social issue or how we should be good and unity and love and brotherhood and all a bunch of words with no particular meaning. But they never spoke about God. Because they have no idea of God. They really have no idea who is God, what is our relationship with Him. They've really lost the devotion. So in Italy especially, people are really appreciating that. And in, there's so many things. One time, just recently when I was there, some devotee was distributing, and there's a lady devotee. So she was distributing, and she was just standing on the pavement. There was a big wall, big high wall where she was standing. And then there was a small door in that wall, and it opened, and there was a nun. He said, "Please come inside." I didn't know. It was a nunnery. You know what that is? It's like sannyasinis, you could say, something like that. So she didn't know what it was, because it was just a wall without any sign. So they called her inside and said, "Please, do you have any of those books we'd like to buy some of your books?" She said, "Whatever books you have, we'd like to buy. We have your Bhagavad Gita and we like it very much. We're reading it every day. We have a class on it every day." We're reading. And there's one priest in Rome. He's a bishop in Rome. He's very prominent. He's very well known. They showed me a newspaper clipping about what one thing he had said. It said that he's actually very close to the devotees. He's so well known that when they write his name in the newspaper, they just write his name. They don't have to say anything else. You know, just like if you write in the newspaper Michael Jackson, you don't have to say Michael Jackson, the famous pop singer, because everyone knows. So like that, he's so well known, they just put his name. So it came in the newspaper that he's giving this idea, he's making this idea. He's a very well known, very well respected bishop. He's preaching that Jesus Christ was a vegetarian and that Christians should be vegetarian. And what happened was recently he invited the devotees to come to his church on Sunday where everyone is there to give a lecture. So he was doing his mass and everything. When the devotees came in, he offered his full obeisances to the devotees. So there are so many things. In Eastern Europe now, in the ex-communist countries, there's so much interest in Krishna consciousness. Because people, actually, they want to be religious. It's like a hungry man, he wants to eat. So these people are hungry for spiritual life because they've been denied it. They've been denied it. And they really want it. Very, very much they want it. So, but the position with them is they're open. They can, because they haven't had any religion, they can choose anything. They can choose. Like in Russia, they have Russian Orthodox Church, or they can be Christians, or they can be Catholics, Protestants. Many people, they want to be religious, but they're just seeing which religion should we follow. So, nearly a year ago now, Newsweek magazine that reported that Hare Krishna movement is the fastest growing religion in the ex-USSR. More people are taking up Krishna consciousness. Because they have a choice, they can see. Which religious teaching has got knowledge of God? If we ask the Christians, who is God? They'll say, God is our Father in heaven. Alright, tell me something more. He created the world. Okay, what else? He's the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end of everything. Okay, what else? And they don't have anything else to say. So, therefore, they say that Jesus is God. Because they want to know who is a person. But God the Father, they have no information. Of course, Jesus himself, he never said, I'm God.
It's just some bogus idea which they dreamed up. But they actually have no idea of God. And what is our relationship with Him? How to understand Him? They have no idea. And as far as knowledge they don't have, and purity they don't have. In our Krishna conscious movement, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication. But what kind of a religion is it where you pray to God, and then you go and fill your belly with the slaughtered creatures of God? And I used to see in the church all the people, it was a social, every Sunday they come, and just before the Mass, everyone's smoking, because they know they have to go 1 hour without smoking. It's really heavy austerity. And as soon as it's all over, they're all out again. God, that's over. Did my duty for the week. Then they go over the road to the bar. Then they go home and have a big Sunday means roast beef. Everyone eats roast beef on Sunday. It's a special tradition. Other days maybe, but Sunday there must be roast beef. So this is Sunday morning. Sunday morning, you sleep till 10 o'clock, you get up, of course you don't take a bath. No one thinks so. Then you go to church, yell and scream at the kids and get them up too, if they haven't already yelled and screamed all over you when you're trying to rest. So then you take them to church, meet all your friends. That's right, I guess. And smoke and drink and have some roast beef and then go to sleep again in the afternoon and then Monday morning back to work again. So it's not very pure and there's no knowledge and there's no joy. Just going to church is a duty, but there's no dancing, chanting, feasting. Actually, they also have prasad, just like Jesus, he had the Last Supper, right? And he distributed food to everyone. Now, of course, they said he ate meat and drank wine. We don't accept these things. Jesus, he's a great devotee of God. Why does he want to eat meat and drink wine for? We don't accept that. That's all. If you read this book, Consciousness and Christianity, it shows you how they twisted the Bible. Just like in any Indian language, what's the word for food? Annam. Rice. That's a high word. In any Indian language, Anna. Anno. Annamu. Different languages. So when you ask someone, have you eaten your meal? You ask them, have you eaten rice? Because when you eat rice. So have you eaten your meal? Have you eaten rice? Have you eaten rice? Because it's the staple food. So the word for food is the same word as the word for rice. Now Jesus, he spoke in Aramaic. And the Bible was eventually written down in Greek. So in Greece, the word for food is the same word as the word for meat. Because their staple food is meat. They eat a lot of meat. Have you eaten meat? It means have you eaten? So this way it got translated to Latin and then to other languages. So we find that Jesus is eating meat. But why should we think that Jesus was a meat eater? Actually, all the early Christians were vegetarians. The early Christians, they were all. And Jesus himself was born into an Essene family. It was like one religious sect at that time, which was all vegetarian. So why should we think that he was a meat eater? It's all bogus. Anyway, they had their meat. They had them, and they made the mass, right? Where they distribute prasad to everyone. Maybe you know, they give everyone a little, it's a token wafer of bread, which is like this big and it's this thick. And that's your prasad. But in Krishna consciousness, when we have a function, we don't just give a little wafer, right, George? We give a whole big meal. So this is very nice. Everything is there. Knowledge of God is there. Chanting and dancing. Prasad. That's pretty good. Everything is there. Complete. Complete knowledge of God and complete process how to approach God. Therefore, Krishna consciousness, full of joy, full of knowledge, everything, pure. very nice. This is the best life. You live happily now, and you prepare yourself to go back to Godhead. Of course, in the material world, there are always problems. So even when we're executing Krishna consciousness, there may be problems. Not there may be, there will be, because that is the nature of the material world. But as Prabhupada said, in this form of practicing Krishna consciousness, there will be some problems. When you go back to the spiritual world, there's no more problems. Everything, just blissful. Katha Ganam. There's no talking in the spiritual world, because everyone's so happy, they only sing. And Nadyam Gamanam. No one walks. When they go from one place to another, they dance. So this is right. This is the spiritual world. Our Krishna consciousness movement is meant for making the spiritual world here, in the material world. If we put Krishna at the center of our lives, then the material world becomes just like the spiritual world. There is no material world. Where is the unhappiness for one who is a devotee of Krishna? For him, Vishvam Purna Sukhayate, the whole world becomes blissful. Where is the misery? There's simply whatever problem, no problem. Chan Hai Krishna. That's all. He doesn't feel any distress. Even sometimes you see Prabhupada, he struggled so much to do something, just like that Bombay temple. Struggled so much. Then when he finally got the land and everything, then he was just laughing. That's all. So many things, so many. One time they were installing the deities of Jagannath in Amsterdam. And the devotees, they made a complete, the arrangements were terrible. It just wasn't, they didn't have any flowers, and there wasn't any, nothing, the place wasn't clean properly. And they had all the TV cameras there. Prabhupada came in, he saw there was no proper arrangement. And he just blasted the devotees. He didn't care, the TV cameras of it. What are you doing? You want to invite God to come here and you want to worship him? And you don't have any flowers, the place isn't clean, there's no organization. He was just blasting them. Then he told Revati Nandan to do the fire sacrifice. So he was chanting the mantras and Prabhupada stopped him every second. You didn't pronounce it right. Not pronounced like that. Agana, not pronounced like that. So he was just, Prabhupada was just everything, he was finding the fault. So the devotees, they became, anyway, Prabhupada did the installation. Then Prabhupada went back to his room, and then all the devotees, they all came together and said, what should we do? We should apologize. Because we did everything wrong. Prabhupada was very upset. There were so many things they did wrong. Everything they did that day just went wrong. They didn't give Prabhupada any prasadam. And eventually they brought him some prasadam. They've already bring it, dropped it all on the floor. He was so nervous that he dropped it off. So then one devotee, on behalf of all the devotees, in the evening went to apologize to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, it was alright. Just I had to teach you how that you should be very serious when you're inviting God. You shouldn't be slack. That's all. I just wanted to teach you that. That's all. And then Prabhupada, he was sitting on his bed, and just like a little boy, he put his knees like this, and he rolled back and forward. He said, Haribo! Haribo! So it seemed like all day he'd been very strong and heavy, but actually, just to teach us, that's all. Otherwise, completely blissful. No problems at all. So many times Prabhupada would be very angry at his disciples, just to teach them, but the next second, and he would talk with the devotee. So you could just see he was just being angry just to show them that you have to be very serious. If they make any mistake, you would show them, just as a teacher who is teaching them. But otherwise, fully satisfied in his relationship with Krishna. So we came a long way from the topic of the verse. The point is that Krishna is wonderful. There's one chapter in Krishna book. Prabhupada entitled it, Wonderful Krishna. That's when all the Rajavasis, they were thinking, they were talking among themselves. This Nanda's son, Krishna, he's a very unusual boy, because so many demons are coming and attacking him, but somehow, by the grace of Lord Narayan, he's always saved. Maybe he's a great mystic yogi, or maybe he's a demigod from the higher planets. And someone thought, well, maybe he's Narayan himself. So they were talking among themselves like this. So Prabhupada gave this title, Wonderful. They were recounting his pastimes. You remember there was that big whirlwind, big storm, and then Krishna got carried away by the wind. And then we thought we'd lost him, but by the grace of Lord Narayan, he was saved. And the big demon was also killed at the same time. I remember there was that big buck, that bird, came to kill Krishna. But somehow or other, we don't know, he must have some kind of mystic shakti, something's protecting him. Mother Yashoda, every day, she would pray to Lord Narayan, please protect my boy. She didn't know that her boy is Lord Narayan. He doesn't need protection.